Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm here this morning with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack, and how are you this fine day?
I am. It is a fine day.
And it's beauty out there.
Yeah. And I'm fine to be. I'm fine as well. It was nice. Got to ride my bike in this morning once again on a nice kind of crisp fallish feeling.
Yeah, it's
morning.
Not even quite crisp yet, but it's getting cool.
Yeah,
yeah. But apparently we're headed for some cooler weather here starting Sunday.
Yeah, but today I think the high's still in the 80s. We're also joined by Sansare Mitchell, a senior writer for the Sandpoint Reader. And Sansare, how did you commute down to the radio station this morning?
I got stuck at every red light imaginable and then parked and ran down the street. So if you saw a young woman running in a green dress this morning and were a little worried about what she was running from, no, I was running to here.
Okay. Well, there we go. That explains it.
We appreciate the extra effort.
Indeed. We really do. We are here to talk about the news of the news of the week, of course. And I guess we can get right into it. How about some state news to start us off? A coalition of public school advocates filed a lawsuit this Wednesday seeking to block House Bill 93, which is Idaho's private school choice program that passed during the legislature this past session. This comes to us from Idaho Ed News. The coalition, which includes the Idaho Education Association, the Moscow School District, and two advocacy groups, held a news conference Wednesday at the State House in Boise. Leaders for the group said they were filing the petition with the Idaho Supreme Court. The petition will ask justices to declare HB 93's tax credit unconstitutional and block the Idaho State Tax Commission from implementing it. The program violates the Idaho Constitution's requirement that the state, quote, this from the Constitution, establish and maintain a general, uniform, and thorough system of public free common schools, unquote. And the coalition argues that it violates that constitutional requirement. In more education news, but a little locally, the Save Our Schools Town Hall on last Thursday drew a pretty good crowd to the Pondere Event Center, and then they had another same group had another event in Priest River, so they've been making the rounds up here in North Idaho. Let's see, how about more statewide news, actually region-wide news. Nearly 80% of the Northwest is in a drought this summer, and that includes North Idaho. An extreme to exceptional drought, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Extreme and exceptional are the two highest categories of drought classification. About 13% of the Northwest currently falls into these categories, according to the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. However, fire crews saw some progress in their efforts to contain wildfires across the region, in part due to a little bit of rainfall that we did get this past week. Firefighters were able to fully contain the sagebrush fire located near Athol on Thursday evening at 47 acres. That would be last Thursday evening. And let's see, the Idaho Department of Lands request that the public stays off trails around the fire as crews continue to clean the affected area. Let's see. How about some county news? You guys may have discussed this last week, actually, but Bonner County commissioners moved to deny a preliminary plat involving a proposed 24-lot subdivision off Baldy Mountain Road. That was a 2-1 vote. Brian Domke and Asia Williams voting in favor of denial, and Ron Korn opposed to denial, I guess. So would have been in favor of the development. The Bonner County Republican Central Committee passed a resolution honoring Charlie Kirk as a Christian martyr for his life, faith, and work. That was a 28-3 vote at the Republican Central Committee, with four absent. There's a editorial or a note in the this week's Reader from one of those who was opposed to the resolution, not on, seems like the opposition was, what opposition there was based around the inclusion of that specific religious language, as opposed to just honoring him as a public servant. In more Charlie Kirk-related local news, a North Idaho College instructor accused of making insensitive remarks about the killing of Charlie Kirk is on administrative leave while NIC is receiving threatening messages sparked by the instructor's alleged comments. Administrators learned of the allegations last Friday and launched an investigation into the instructor's social media post the same day, according to NIC. However, the college has not publicly identified the instructor, so as far as confirmed information about that, that's about all we have. Everything else is speculation online. Okay, moving a little closer to Sandpoint, a little city business here. This is the big page one, well, technically, I guess, page three story, but the big spread from Sansre Mitchell in this week's Reader. The Bonner County Historical Society and Museum has petitioned the city to renew their 40-year lease at Lakeview Park, which began in 1979 and therefore expired in 2019. The city proposed a new 30-year lease in May. Neither item has been approved or denied by City Council as of yet, and the future that leaves the future of the museum somewhat in limbo. And we'll be talking to Sansre more about that and figure out what's going on with the museum and the city in just a moment. More interesting City Hall happenings include a number of Chafe 150 bike ride supporters came down to the recent city, the most recent City Council meeting to encourage the city to revisit its open container policy at City Beach. The Chafe 150 bike ride, of course, begins and ends at City Beach, and for many years they used the lawn in front of the Best Western Edgewater as their reception area, which, because that was private property, allowed them to serve beer and wine. However, with the changes, with the new ownership and Averill Hospitality taking ownership of that location, the Chafe 150 now intends to continue hosting its reception, but on public property, which means that the city's open container law would prohibit them from having a reception that features beer and wine, as they have for, I believe, the entire history of the event. So they're looking for some kind of provision to allow a private party like that to have open containers at City Beach. No official action taken on that yet by the city. And what else? What have I missed here, folks? What else would you put in the headlines at the top of the show? Anything?
Well, you kind of covered everything I had.
Well, okay. There we go.
There have been, for Charlie Kirk, there's been a vigil that was held.
Yes.
At City Beach, I believe. And then I think there was a walk. On the Long Bridge as well during the course of the week. Those gained, according to the Bee, 70 people attended the vigil. I'm not sure how many people made the walk.
Yeah.
Bit of national news is impacting us here locally.
Yeah.
That much.
Yeah, there you go. Over, it looks, according to Carolyn Lobsinger wrote in the Bee, that over 60 people turned out on Saturday for a walk through downtown Sandpoint to honor Charlie Kirk. Mm-hmm. So yes, big. Both of those events good turnout for that.
As you mentioned, with the city weighing the policy for alcohol mm-hmm. containers at City Beach, that right now is up in the air. I think Chafe organizers are anticipating that they're not going to be able to use that lawn in front of the Edgewater because of construction, mm-hmm. not because Everell said they can't, but
okay.
it's going to be
right.
probably all torn up.
Good point. Yeah.
Assuming Everell proceeds with its plans. Mm-hmm. But I will point out that for years there was certain events were permitted to have alcohol at the beach. There used to be actually a beer bash at the beach that I think the Lions Club put on.
4th of July, right?
Oh, I think. Well, actually, it wasn't even 4th of July. It was,
no.
It was a fall thing, and it was kind of a fundraiser. Mm-hmm. So concerns have been that if they let any group have a open container or serve beer and wine on at the park, that they'll be, you know, inundated with requests to do mm-hmm. that. So I think that's going to be kind of a major point as the city weighs it out. But there's probably a way to craft a policy that will allow some certain events that are, you know, raising the civic good, like the Chafe Ride does with the money it raises for education, to have some beer and wine served. So we'll see how that pans
yeah,
out.
Yeah, without making it a free-for-all.
Yeah.
Turning it into, yeah, turning City Beach into South Padre Island, for example. Something like that.
Never been to South Padre Island. Apparently you have.
I went there. I have, in fact, been to South Padre Island. Yeah. It's a scene.
Yes. This must have been during spring break.
This was many, many years ago. Let's see. Well, let's talk about Sansaray, the big one here. And this, I will confess, this came, even though I'm somebody who kind of pays attention to what's going on at the museum, this opening the paper and finding this story actually caught me a little bit by surprise. I knew that they were in talks with the city to renew their lease. I didn't realize how apparently difficult this process had become for the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. The building, they secured a lease for $1 per year in 1979, and that lease term was for 40 years, and they were then able to build their current museum location, which is on Lakeview Park and down on the end of Ellis Street. And that's where the museum is and has always been. That's the only location that I believe the Historical Society has ever had. When it ended in, or what happened when it ended in 2019, when that lease was up?
So essentially, the Historical Society and Museum went to the city and said, here we go. Our lease is up. It has a renewal clause that allows them as the lessee to renew pretty much no matter what for a like term, as it says. So another 40 years, potentially another 30 years. And this was under a previous mayoral administration. This is under Shelby Rongstad and city administrator Jennifer Stapleton. And so they went in, they said, here we are, we're ready. And they really didn't hear anything. There was no denial. There was no, oh yeah, we're working on it, just kind of silence. So they kept going back to the city and asking again and again. And they didn't hear anything, and they didn't essentially have an active lease until 2023, when they were planning to do a $20,000 worth of sewer and waterline improvements on the site. And they said, you know, we're not going to put all this money into it if we're going to get kicked out. And so they received a temporary renewal that just reaffirmed the terms of the original lease, not a new lease, just an extension. And that is what's going to expire this September. So when the new city administration came in, they again went back to the city, said, here's what we're trying to do, received a lot of silence, got put on city agendas as discussion items, not action items, multiple times, made a bunch of presentations. And eventually this last May, our new mayor, Jeremy Grimm, came and presented to them an entirely new lease. This is a 30-year term, and it does not have the automatic renewal clause that the original lease does, which means that the city could potentially not renew. And I believe it also made rent negotiable in the future, which, I mean, $1 a year is choice. And so the city, or the museum essentially, went to the city and said, you know, we are open to negotiating. We're able to amend the original lease, but we're not going to sign this new lease because without an automatic renewal clause, why would we put a whole bunch of money into this building? Why would people donate to us and volunteer their time if we are on, you know, an expiration date, essentially? And so it was going to appear on last week's city council agenda. At the request of the museum, Mayor Grimm took it off. And now all communications are going to be happening between the two parties' lawyers to try and figure this out. Mayor Grimm has said specifically that, you know, this is not about not valuing the museum. It's obviously an important resource for everyone and serves an important civic duty. But he said, essentially, it takes, in the city's view, power away from the residents of Sandpoint in Bonner County if their elected officials can't vet and vote on the renewal. And he has pointed to quite a few other different lease agreements that were done years ago that sort of gave institutions carte blanche. You know, you can stay here for a dollar, do whatever you want. And how those relationships have become very good for that institution, but not so much for the city. And maybe that institution's goals and objectives have changed over the years. But as the museum has stated multiple times, nothing about the museum has changed. It's still doing the same thing it set out to do in 1979. And it's not a commercial enterprise that is going to be making people tons of money. So none of those hesitations really apply.
Mm-hmm. Well, did Grimm provide local examples, or was he pointing to other examples? Examples like in other cities where the relationship has changed?
He did provide local examples. Mm-hmm. I only heard about them in passing, so mm-hmm. I don't have access to the specific ones that he gave the museum. Mm-hmm. I believe there was one that had to do with a sort of temporary, it's not active anymore, but a temporary lease agreement with Lighthouse at some point. Mm-hmm. But again, that's a very money-driven institution.
Yeah. Let's see. So the differences between the, I guess, how about this? I'll phrase it this way. The museum's opposed to this, the 30-year lease mm-hmm. that was proposed by Mayor Grimm. They prefer the 40-year lease. Why?
So the big thing is the renewal clause.
Yeah.
So they've said that, you know, timeline could be negotiable. Obviously, they would like a 99-year lease to mm-hmm. really solidify their future, because as they've said, you know, they're a historical institution, so they're looking 100 years back and 100 years forward. Mm-hmm. But honestly, that's the key thing that they are requiring, because again, they have all of these upgrades planned. They have a lot of ideas on how to expand the museum, but they cannot do that if they think, you know, in 30 years they're going to get kicked out. And they have said multiple times that they don't believe it's the city's intention to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. They just think that they're in an odd kind of negotiation technique right now.
Hmm. The term that would be for 30 years, there's nothing in there. If it was for 30 years, they would be secure in that location for the 30 years. It wouldn't be coming up like for a vote yearly at city council or anything like that?
Yeah. No, not okay. Unless they broke the terms of the lease agreement.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what, and now it's in the hands of the attorneys.
Yes. So they will be negotiating. I personally, I don't really know how that the city can go forward because there is that renewal clause in the original lease. Mm-hmm. So I would anticipate that the museum is going to win this if it comes to an actual legal battle. Right now, there's not a threat of litigation. It's just they're putting it in more experienced hands to mm-hmm. kind of whittle out these details.
Now, the city, I mean, the museum is looking at doing an expansion. So that's a key part of this, right? Because they don't want to invest a bunch of money if they're going to be losing that lease. Can you tell us what the plans are for expansion?
Yes. So first, even more important than the expansion is the fact that they have a leaking roof right now, which jeopardizes the integrity of all of the artifacts in the museum. And that's going to cost an estimated $90,000. So that's the big motivator right now, is this needs to be done as quickly as possible. Now, the expansion portion, they're not trying to, you know, make a big, fancy, modern building. They love where they are. They love the size. The issue is that they have over 400,000 objects. Mm-hmm. And there's a picture in this week's Reader, which it doesn't show the full extent of the rooms in the background of the museum, which are just chock full to the brim, up to the ceiling, full of artifacts. Mm-hmm. And they're all very neatly cataloged and stored and protected. But they recently had a person who specializes in museums come through and sort of do an evaluation of it. And they were like, yes, you're doing an amazing job. You need tons more space. And so the goal, it's broken down into two phases. Phase one would add about 1,500 square feet that they would use for archives and then for sort of archives / classrooms. And they have a lot of ideas of what they want to do with that. They would really love to have the archives set up as like a proper library so that people could come in and do research themselves, and they would hold courses where you get taught how to go through the archives. And that would be a multi-generational learning thing. They also wanted to do live storytelling in there so that you can have kids interacting with grandparents and hearing those stories firsthand and recording them so that the museum's catalog grows. They also, in that phase one, would like to renovate all of the HVAC or HVAC system for the museum because it is pretty old. And you really need state-of-the-art temperature and humidity control when you're preserving things like paper and fabric. So that would be phase one. It would cost about $730,000. Phase two would be another 2,700 square feet. And that would be mostly, again, storage so that everything is very easily accessible. And then also renovating the current layout of the museum, because right now they have the permanent exhibits sort of in the back and the temporary ones to the front, which means that every time they change a temporary exhibit, they have to close the whole museum down because you can't be walking through like a construction area. And so they would like to shift all of the exhibits around to ensure that when they're moving exhibits, people can still access part of the museum. Also just making it, you know, flow better, easier for people when there are high traffic times, like when groups of school kids are coming through, just to make everything a lot easier for them. And so that change would cost about $1.6 million. And that would also, nothing is settled right now, but they were hoping that they could kind of expand into the yellow caboose area, which people know you can't really get into that unless you have a scheduled appointment, because they don't want to just like leave it open to the public and have kids go in and vandalize it. Someone from the museum has to go and unlock it, and there are only 2 part-time employees. So that's not usually possible. So they are hoping to connect that to the larger building. Maybe have a little windowed hallway, something that makes everything safer and more accessible to people. So this is a very small expansion, strictly doing what is necessary to suit the space. It would not impact any of the park's landmarks. It's going on the little campus, right, where the museum is right now, which you don't really see. I mean, kids play on it, but there's a huge field next to it that they play on more. So it wouldn't impact the trees or anything. And they would like to, if they go forward with this, partner with the adjacent Lions Club and the Kinnikinnick Native Plant Society to do a whole bunch of landscaping, to have kind of outdoor classrooms with native plants and also just match all of the buildings to one another. So it looks like a more cohesive, beautiful campus.
Would they have more room for talks and lectures?
Yes, they would. They have a lot more educational ideas planned. Everything that I'm talking about now, though, these are ideas that they have dreamed up with their board and with their volunteers. And Hannah Combs, who is the executive director, and Tanya Sherman, who is the board president, have been very clear that for every little step, if they were able to go forward with this, every little step would go to the public and say, what do you think about that? Do you actually want to learn how to be an archivist? Do you actually want more talks? They did a deep audit of all of their programs and found out, you know, which ones have the highest attendance, which ones do people actually like? Is it the Pioneer Picnic? And they also went into, you know, their more popular exhibits. Everything that they do, they audited to prioritize what people actually want. And then they created a 5-year plan from that and a 5-year budget. So they have planned for the long term for everything and will be going to the public with every little step.
Our time grows short, but these are major improvements that they have, that they're considering. And what would happen if what ends up happening with the city is a 30-year lease with without the automatic renewal, I guess this is where the fear of the museum comes in, is that this would be money that they spend on these improvements, and then in 30 years, they could be evicted from the building after making all these improvements.
Yes, basically. Because in their lease, it stipulates that they have to do all of the maintenance, all of the improvements. They have to pay for all of that, even though they don't own it. So they pay for everything. The city still owns the property. Right. So they have been looking at alternative locations, if goodness forbid that they had to move. But all of those are, you know, as for now, kind of out of the question. The big one that they've been looking at for quite a few years, I believe, is the old greenery building, which would be an amazing museum. It's like it's a piece of history in itself. But to get all of the HVAC and everything in there, it would cost around $11 million, which the museum kind of blew its budget fixing all of the water mains at the current property. That was $20,000. They did recently receive a $1 million donation from an anonymous donor, which they are hoping to put into more programs and into their roof. But that is the extent of their finances. So that
would that be used for that first phase of the expansion?
Hopefully. They would also, because they spent all of their money in the past, they would like to refill their coffers to make sure that operations can
keep
going.
Have a nice
going.
Reserve. Yeah. That's prudent for a nonprofit organization.
Well, indeed.
Like ourselves. KRFY.
That's right. So. This is, yes, community radio for North Idaho, folks, and we are a non-commercial, nonprofit organization. It's 8:30, and our time is drawing to a close. The museum is basically, right now it's in the hands of attorneys for the city and the museum as they discuss. No date set, I imagine, for any kind of vote at city council.
Not yet, no. Yeah,
but that will be the next...
The councilor. They're going to hash it out, right?
Yeah.
We would hope.
We would hope. Okay. Sansere, thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Mm-hmm. Thank
you. Also have in this week's Reader, you have a nice article on the famous postcard that took, what was it, 80 years?
70-some years?
72 years to be delivered to Mr. Alan Ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing has gotten a lot of press.
Oh, picked up by the New York Times, by CNN.
Yeah.
But the article focuses less on the postcard and more on Alan because he is a pretty cool dude.
Yeah.
So I would recommend reading, and if you see him on the street, talking to him and asking him about the time he was held at gunpoint in the ER.
Oh,
that was interesting. Yeah. Okay. Anything coming up in next week's Reader you want to preview us on or anything?
My lips are sealed.
Okay. All right.
Jack, we should at least mention that Sandpoint High School Bulldogs had a big night last night. They beat in football Pocatello 56-15. Playing in Missoula. Wow. Pocatello had beaten them the last 2 years, so it was kind of a sweet revenge. And then volleyball, the varsity girls won last night over Lakeside. So those Bulldogs.
Yeah, we're going to have to get Max from the B in here to give us that update. I think they're surprising all their critics, at least the football team
The football team is 5-0. Yeah, they're really going for it there.
Okay, it's time for Otto's Eclectic Mix. Thanks for listening to North Idaho News of the Week. Back next week with more news. Sansere Mitchell, senior writer for the Sandpoint Reader. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.